Welcome in, everybody, to another episode of 410 Sports Talk. I am James Haskell, along with my co-host Glenn Martin, and we are here on a Tuesday night to break down all the proceedings following the week one of the Baltimore Ravens, and the NFL is in the books, Glenn. Lots of drama.
Oh, week one was absolutely insane. I mean, with the injuries both here and elsewhere, it looks like pretty much all the offenses, with the exception of maybe just a few, had a down day. So yeah, a lot to talk about. Yeah, certainly with this one. And it helps when the All 22 is out, and luckily we have a guest here that knows how to interpret it.
No, the resident Ravens film professional, film breakdown professional, right? Here.
Yeah, because that is not us. And you can't see it all from broadcast view. It's just bottom line. You can't see it all. You don't know what the hell is going on down the field. Even though some people, I think you can. But I'm excited to get into this one. We got to talk about what's happening since the injuries. What's the update? Yep. Also wanted to kick to you a possible trade proposal at some point in this one. But a lot to talk about. And this is a big week, man. We could bury the kitty cats. We could bury them this week, Jimbo. But we're still we're gonna be turning the page after this episode, and we're gonna start on to Cincinnati, as Bill
absolutely
Belichick.
But
said.
One of the things, oh, I just said it. Gosh dang it. Wait, absolutely no. 100% is the thing. Yeah, I got a lot of trigger words here. But this is one. This is kind of, I want to take a second and look at. Let me back up. After the game in the past few days, I've been talking to folks that are Ravens fans, and I talk to a ton of people, and they seem to be down in the dumps, and expectations have changed, and Super Bowl is already out of reach, and this, that, and the other. I just want to say a few things, a little bit of story time, okay? I'm going to toot my own horn here. Just remember, guys, it's a long race. I told Glenn this. You guys will crack up at this. Two races ago, this guy decided that at mile three, he was going to pass me, and he's mouth breathing at mile three, just right. And me too, me a year ago, I'd have been like, all right, I'm taking this son of a gun down, right? But slowly and methodically, mile 18, ran right past him, breathing straight out the nostrils, and he started walking. Just took his soul, right?
Straight
just
out took the nostrils. It right from
him, right? So my point is that it's
is this a
long
tortoise
range.
In the hare? Are you telling us a tortoise in the hare story, Jimbo?
Well, I like to think I'm the tortoise and the hare.
Oh, dang. But
ultimately, I guess what I'm trying to say is that, like, let's keep things in perspective. You said it, Glenn. Injuries to a multitude of teams around the AFC, bad quarterback play everywhere. Like, let's look at this relatively, guys. It wasn't like the Ravens were in the dumps and everyone else played incredible. We won a football game by 16. Right? So, 16. Like, let's take a second, sit back, and realize what's going on. I just wanted to get that off my chest. I felt like I had to.
Okay. All right. Well, I thought you were bringing up Cinnabon. That's what I honestly thought we were about to hear about, but I'm glad that they've been spared from your target here. But all right. So let's get into, I want to talk a little bit about the injuries, Jimbo. Obviously J.K. Dobbins sucks for him. Bummer for the team. Seems like they really, feel for the guy. He's gone for the year. Now, they're heavy at running back, with Melvin Gordon still in town and Keaton Mitchell expected to come back somewhere around week five. But there's also been rumors that the Ravens could be a team that would reach out and grab a guy like Jonathan Taylor, who's on the outs with his team currently and is looking for a new home. But that's going to come with a draft pick to trade and potentially, it looks like, a pretty big paycheck to keep him around.
Yeah.
So my two questions are, Jimbo, do you think they would trade for him with potential for a long-term situation? And then second part, or would they trade for him understanding it's just a rental?
So I'm going to bust everyone's bubble here. It's no and no.
No chance?
I just don't think it happened because why would you, for a rental, right? You're still, the Colts don't care that it's a rental. You're still giving up. They still want the same capital. Right, whether you're going to sign up to a long-term deal or rental, they don't give two craps, right? So, and then the other thing is the Ravens. I truly believe they feel good at running back. I mean, look, Justice did well, had two touchdowns, and we know ever dependable Gus Edwards. You know what he's going to give you throughout the year, and then you have guys on the back end that can get the job done. Well, I mean, that have at least done it in the past in Melvin Gordon. And then you have this young kid, Keaton Mitchell. So I think the Ravens feel good. Now, if you were to ask me this same thing about maybe a different position group, I think they would be quicker to look externally. Certainly, like, even at safety, I think there's already more credence to the idea of looking around
than there is
at running back. Right, exactly. Yeah.
Now, would that change? Does that change, knock on wood, if Gus were to maybe tweak something this weekend?
Well, then
now you're down to Justice, Melvin, and then eventually Keaton Mitchell, but not yet.
Yeah, maybe that could change things.
Okay. But right now, you're okay.
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm not in panic mode from a running back perspective because we've got one guy in there, two guys in there that have been productive throughout their careers, and Justice, who seems to be flourishing in this offense.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, on to the rest.
What about
of the,
you feel the same or you
yeah,
feel
no,
like
I agree. I agree. I just get worried if Gus were to go down or, you know, Justice as well, because here's the thing. They can't lean too. I don't think they want to lean too heavily on Justice in the backfield because they love what he brings to special teams. And if you put too much of a, you know, responsibility for him as an offensive player, that means you're taking him out of his special teams duties likely, and then you're replacing him with a worser, you know, a guy who's maybe not as good at that in that area, which, you know, John, he values that special teams. But right now, I think they're good where they're at. Now, other quick news here, torn pec for Marcus Williams.
Fun.
So not, man, poor guy. You talk about bad luck. Every time it's a contact injury with this guy and it's something goofy. He tears his pec. So the Ravens did make a corresponding move, Jimbo. They bring in an experienced veteran, which is nice. He's not a guy off the street with no experience. He's Daron Harmon has been signed to the practice squad. He's played in, let's see, he's got 78 career starts under his belt.
Mm-hmm.
And last year had 86 tackles and 2 picks for the Raiders. So a guy who brings some experience. Of course, they still have Geno Stone and guys like Ardarius, who's maybe more of a corner than a safety. But what's your thoughts on bringing that guy in and just kind of the state of the safety room?
Yeah, I'm not excited about the state of the safety room, but I like the move. I think the thing I like about this guy is that I'm not saying he's Marcus Williams, but there's a similarity in the way that they play football. So I think it will help the integration of him into the defense because he'll be asked to do a lot of the same things. I think that there's some, like I said, some similarities there. It's not like you're bringing in a guy that's stylistically totally different. So I think that helps. I'm okay with the move. I'm excited about it. I'm excited to see what Kyle can do, you know, ultimately, whatever functionally he ends up being his role on the defense with Marcus down, he's going to have a bigger one now with Marcus down. Right. So I'm excited about it. I think, you know, every situation can be an opportunity for a guy, and we're expecting big things out of Kyle, and he's going to have to take a bigger bite out of the pie here. Mm-hmm. But I think it's going to be fun, something to look forward to. Now, the one thing I'm not 100% on, is he out, and have they broken down the options? I know John said he has options. I'm talking about Marcus Williams.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I think that maybe they're hoping that surgery isn't needed so they can rehab it. But I mean, either way, I mean, I think to count on him at all this year.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you'd be a little crazy. So, I'm playing it like he's done for the year, but and hoping that I'm wrong. But like DK put up there, Daryl Worley. Shout out to Daryl Worley because seems like a heck of a guy. I saw they had like, you know, the little wired or behind the scenes that the Ravens do for training camp. Seems like a good guy. Seems like a leader. Now he's promoted to the 53 off the practice squad.
Yeah,
so good for him. And then just quickly want to finish out the injury stuff, and then we're gonna get to our guest here. Tyler Linderbaum, week to week with an ankle, likely won't play this Sunday, but it seems like he avoided any massive or any major injuries. Mm-hmm. But that's a loss because it looks like Mustafer is going to be the center with McCary filling in at left tackle. So Linderbaum, who might be our best, you know, offensive lineman and is now going to be gone for at least a couple weeks. What's your thoughts on that, Jimbo?
Yeah, you know, I'm bummed about it because I agree with you. I think he's probably our best offensive lineman. But this is what I'll say. I said this to you on the phone earlier. Linderbaum is, I think he comes back sooner than Ronnie. I think that he comes back quicker than what people are expecting him to come back because he's just a tough son of a gun. I mean, look, he's the only one to shake off the Liz Frank here in Baltimore.
Knock on wood.
Right. He just told his body no.
That's right.
He just said, no, this is not happening today. And it didn't happen. And look.
He Dwight Schruted it.
That's right. He Dwight Schruted it. That's right. He voluntarily lowered his cholesterol. Right. And just has that much body control. And I think that, you know, I think he's the type of kid that if he ain't in a boot, he's taping that sucker up. I think he's going to be out there soon.
He's just taping it. Not even using athletic tape.
That's right. He's just could you imagine a guy come out with duct tape over his cleat? Just straight up duct tape.
Dude. I can see Linderbaum doing it. But hopefully.
I'm encouraged that there's no structural stuff going on there. And I think he's back quicker, sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Let's just hope Mustafer can hold down the fort.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. And then also last one, Ronnie Stanley week to week with the knee, you know, it's another thing I see on Twitter a lot. People banging on Ronnie Stanley for his injuries. This guy, this isn't like any of these injuries are his fault. Every time it's somebody diving into the back of his legs. This is bad luck. Like I get frustrated. I mean, I get it. Like he's highly paid. He's an important guy to the team, and you hate to see him go down. But let's not act like it's a softness thing with him, because there's 300 and some pounders being thrown in the back of his leg while he's blocking another 300 and some pounder. So it's like, I just hate when people get on. But he's week to week. What's your thoughts on McCary now being the left tackle?
You know, I feel like we've always been McCary guys, because we just love that he fights and he holds on for dear life. And I bet you he'd be really good at rodeo. I just have this like an alligator wrestler or something like that. What I mean? Yeah, like a snake, like, you know, those guys that hunt giant anacondas and stuff like that. Just, for some reason, I see McCary just being good at that, right?
Pulling catfish out by arm catching them.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm okay with it. Like, I ride with McCary. I feel comfortable. Yeah. I don't get super nervous when he's out there. I ride with him. So I'm okay with it. I mean, it is what it is. Status quo, right? Ronnie's missed a ton, and we see McCary a lot. So I'm excited to get Cole's take on it, because I'm hoping that it makes me feel better and not more nervous than I currently do. Maybe I should be more nervous.
Yeah. Well, at least we know it's, at least to this point, temporary that he's going to be there. But I think when you look around the league and all the bad offensive line play, I think you could do a whole lot worse than backing up Ronnie Stanley with Patrick McCary. But all right, let's get to, as I think we've gotten through all the major injury concerns. So let's get to our guest, who I'm super excited to have on. A guy, like Jimmy said, film guru, guy can break it down. Look, I'm a fan. Jimmy's a fan. You know, we're no experts on left guard play. Okay, I'll keep it 100.
Right. Okay? You just heard my description of McCary. That's about as deep as it gets, ladies and gentlemen.
Man. We try. But we're no experts on the big sloppies or really anywhere else. We're fans, but this guy is. So welcome back to the program, Cole Jackson. Appreciate you joining us. How you doing tonight, Cole?
What's going on, fellas? Oh, I made it tonight.
Me and DK hit it at the same time.
That's right. No, we appreciate it.
I don't know why, DK. I don't know why.
Cole's crazy enough to come back. Cole's
good. No, I love it. You guys are digging into the O-line talk. I'm here for it.
Absolutely. Yeah,
and we're definitely happy that you're here to kind of give us a hand with it. But I want to start, if it's okay with you, Jimbo, I want to start in the running back room. I want to kind of pick your brain. JK wasn't there virtually all of training camp, so it's not like the Ravens aren't relatively prepared for his absence. But what kind of a loss is it losing a guy like JK Dobbins? And who's the bigger beneficiary, in a sense, of playing time with this loss between Gus and Justice Hill?
I think it's one of those things, and I kind of thought about it with, you know, when Mark Andrews went down, I tweeted out, you know, a couple days before, it looks like he's not going to play, just some things I was hearing that it sounded like he could have played if it was a playoff game or a significant divisional game, but I think they opted to rest him. And everyone was like, no worries. We got Isaiah Likely. We got Charlie Kohler. Guys that I'm excited about, but they're just not Mark Andrews, right? And so you kind of see, you know, Likely had some rough plays, missed some blocks. You had Kohler with that bad drop. So it's just, it's stuff where you miss that kind of top-end talent. And that's kind of how I see it with J.K. Dobbins. I mean, we had that one play last week where Dobbins was engulfed at the sideline and somehow gets away from the tackle. And it's those types of dynamic plays that's the difference between a J.K. Dobbins and a backup running back. And we've seen that over the past few years when we haven't had J.K. Dobbins, because now we're going on year three. Draft him in 2020. He's basically played only 2020 when he was splitting carries with Mark Ingram and Gus Edwards. So I do like Gus Edwards, obviously. You know, we know what he can do. And I think who's the biggest beneficiary? It was surprising to me to see Justice Hill take those goal line snaps, especially on runs, like straight up runs and power runs at that. So it does make me wonder, you know, is Todd Monken just a big Jay Hill guy? Is he walking around wearing a number 43 jersey?
For real.
So that was one thing that stood out to me that I really want to focus on in terms of utilization. I would have expected that to be Gus because he's the big bruiser. And he did score on the 2-point conversion when they got the penalty on the extra point, moved to the 1-yard line, and he ran in the 2-point to put them up 15. So, I mean, we'll see, but I'm actually starting to lean Justice Hill. I know he's kind of the go-to pass catcher now. We'll see what happens when Keaton Mitchell's back. He's someone I'm very excited about, especially for his pass catching. But traditionally, I would have always went Gus as kind of number two, but the utilization and, you know, the goal line usage, it makes me think Jay Hill's going to have a bigger role than we think.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to deny what you're saying. I mean, I think we're starting to see that trend. So it'd be interesting to see how it goes throughout the long term of the season. Like I said, it's a long season, so we got to hope these guys stay healthy. But I think that Justice has the ability to be a productive back within the system. It's going to be a lot of fun to see. I tell you what, though, man, I'm going to be forever thinking about J.K. Dobbins just absolutely hitting the boing button when he went into the end zone. I mean, that was just special, right? Like, it's something simple that J.K. would just do. But, like, I don't think anybody else on our team can just take off from that distance and catch 44 inches of air. Like, you know what I mean? It's just a bummer that ended up happening the way that it did, because it didn't look like that type of injury at first. But, Glenn, I want to go back, if it's cool with you. Cole, I kind of want to chat about the O-line. I want your breakdown on which position you think is most to be worried about, like the loss of Linderbaum, the loss of Ronnie, and you know, kind of give us your breakdown on Mustafa and then also on McCary, because we'd like to know more than the fact that he's a crocodile hunter.
McCary going into left tackle, this happens every year. Every year he ends up playing snaps at tackle and everybody freaks out, loses their shit. And then McCary goes out there and gets the job done. And he's just, he's scrappy dude, you know, and on the mystery bus. Like, it's just, that's who he is. He finds ways to win. I will say one thing that does suck. I would prefer him against speed rushers than Trey Hendrickson on the Bengals. I just think this Bengals D-line is a bad matchup for McCary at left tackle and Mustafa at center, because center is going to see DJ Reader and, you know, even Tyler Linderbaum's a bad matchup, because that's one of those, you know, what you call big sloppy. So that's one of the biggest sloppy you can find. but Linderbaum battled his ass off last year. Is Mustafa going to be able to do that? I don't know. And I think John Simpson, despite what his Pro Football Focus grade was, I personally thought Simpson struggled way more than his grade suggested. It's why I struggle with grades, because, you know, I'll watch the film, I'll break it down. I put a video out this morning on the pass game struggles. Three of the plays of the five bad ones of the first half I looked at were John Simpson, and it's like, oh, he got an 87 though, so good for him, whatever the hell that means. But to be a little bit more, so the thing that McCary does a really good job of, and him versus Hendrickson will be really interesting, because Hendrickson's one of your old school throwback power rushers where he's going to, you know, jack your pads and then be able to branch off counter moves. That's just what he's become so good at. And that's how McCary wins. He's all about, you know, taking angles, getting good hand placement, you know, compensating for his short arms, and just kind of riding guys and getting through that getting through those reps and really recovering and pushing guys out the back of the pocket. That's just how he's won when he's played tackle. I would argue his best play in the NFL has been at offensive tackle. Hasn't been when he's played guard. Hasn't been when he played center. It's been when he's played tackle. So he's going to go out there to a position of strength. He's going to have a crappy matchup, but knowing him, he's going to battle through it. Sam Mustafa, on the other hand, is one that I'm just worried about. He doesn't do anything exceptionally. well. He's just kind of, but I mean, he's a backup level center. Like, this is what you have to deal with. There's not 32 starting caliber centers to go around the league, let alone a team to have a guy that can start reasonably well. So I am definitely worried about the center position. That said, coming from an offensive line coaching perspective, as a coach, I'd way rather have to help my center than help my tackles. And so, you know, you can do a lot more creative things in the middle of the line to give help. And that's, you can use the running back stepping up in the pocket. You can use a variety of double teams to help your center. That's something that we saw Tyler Linderbaum shift to help a lot of John Simpson, because the Texans play an even front. So Tyler Linderbaum didn't have a nose in front of him all day like he does against some of these AFC North teams. And we saw it last year with the Giants and the Jets. And although he played the nose tackle gauntlet last year, so he didn't have that on Sunday, and they were able to give help to John Simpson. And then eventually Zeitler started to step up, and he kind of had a rough first quarter. So once he stepped up, I thought, you know, that really panned out. So that's what I'm expecting. So I'm looking for those two to take on a lot of DJ Reader together as much as possible. You'll probably see Zeitler single blocking BJ Hill, and then you're going to have Moses and McCary on islands against Hendrickson and Sam Hubbard.
Ooh. Oh boy!
Yeah, that's quite scary. Now you mentioned
that's what happens when you lose two starters in week one. Yeah. Like, it's, that's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, really look around the league. There's not a lot of good offensive line, you know, groups out there, much less backups behind them. But you mentioned PFF, and it's tough because I think PFF graded Justin Fields as having a better game than Jordan Love when they played against each other this past weekend, and Jordan Love had 3 touchdowns, no picks. So I'm not really sure how it goes, but two players that were rated, I think, the very bottom on our offense was our two tight ends. And people were excited about, you know, what's behind Mark Andrews. They realized that they belong behind Mark Andrews.
Clearly.
You know, your favorite comparison. But they still thought they were pretty damn good. And Isaiah Likely especially. And then they come out, they grade out terribly. Isaiah Likely's a relative non-factor. Kohler has the bad drop. Some people are saying Vokalek's our second best tight end now. They're ready to bail on those two guys.
People, man. People.
Already. So what's your take on what happened with the tight ends this past weekend?
Likely was inconsistent, because there's plenty of plays where he, you know, did really well, especially blocking out in space. He made it was one of Zay's first downs when he caught I'm trying to remember which one. It's the one where Likely stood with his hands up because he didn't want to. Like, that's just a good heads-up play. And there was a couple of where he was getting out in space, making good blocks. But there was plenty where, you know, the biggest deficiency I saw in Isaiah Likely's game was his blocking in line. And that's something that Andrews really got better once he got into the league. And I remember in an interview Andrews was talking about, it was working with Nick Boyle early in his career to develop those inline blocking skills. And Likely just can't, you know, when he's lined up beside the tackle, he just can't blow defensive ends off the line. It's just not his game. He's a move tight end. Kohler, that was his biggest deficiency coming out. I think he was a good comparison to Andrews coming out, because he was a true kind of receiving tight end, a guy that could split out a little bit, all the things Andrews did so well at Oklahoma. And Kohler just hasn't developed that blocking skill the way Andrews did. But in the second half, you saw a ton of Patrick Ricard. And I think I said it, we did the show right before the 53-man came out, and I thought it was nuts that people thought Ricard wasn't going to make this team. And Ricard was a huge reason that the offense got going in the second half. And it's not from his ability to touch the football, make plays, make guys miss, score touchdowns. It's from what he does, you know, his pass protection, the way he was able to use 6-man protections and help out the tackles when they were struggling against Will Anderson, Jonathan Greenard, and Jerry Hughes. His ability in the run game to just, there's no, and I'll say this till the day I die, there's no offense in the existence of football that can't use a 305-pound battering ram. I don't care if you run the old Florida spread in the SEC, they'd find a way to use him. He's that good. So, you know, if people have issues with his contract situation, completely understand, that's a different conversation. I'm talking about the guy that I'm using on the field. And so we saw him put in, what I liked about Todd Monken is they used him in the best way possible. They used him as a pass protector. He wasn't out there running routes. You know, it was the way that I think fans wanted to see him used, and he was a battering ram like he always is.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you, and I think that we'll see more of Ricard in this coming game, just like you said, helping out McCary and, you know, helping out the offensive line as a whole. So it'll be interesting. I mean, yeah, that narrative got put to bed very quickly, but I'm also, I mean, Glenn and Cole, both of you guys, and DK as well, how stoked are you guys about the potential of Mark Andrews coming back? How frustrating was it? I mean, it seems that Lamar has a trust issue with Likely, in my opinion. I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but he's not super excited about throwing him the football. Like, it doesn't, like, Zay obviously is excited about it. OBJ obviously trusts him, right? Like, those things are pretty apparent to me. But and even Bateman, like, when he was scrambling and, you know, he found Bateman, he was able to dish that ball to him. But he didn't seem too excited about throwing the ball to Isaiah Likely. Now he's very excited about throwing the ball to Mark Andrews. I think that's going to make a big difference in this game coming up. But, yeah, I'm excited just to see Mark back there out there on the field. My goodness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I knew you had an early beat on him, Cole. Is he playing this week?
Sounds like it, yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty confident he'll be out there. And I'm pretty sure he could have played last week, but they decided it's Houston. Remember, they have three AFC North Road games in a row, so that had to factor into their decision-making. These are going to be physical football games. And, I mean, that's the difference with Andrews. He's the safety blanket. He's, you know, when shit hits the fan like it was in the first half, who does he look to? It's 89, and that's what I think he's going to need. When he has to throw hot, when he has to throw into the blitz, he's going to look inside to 89.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I want to switch the other side, Jimbo. We've been talking a lot of offense. Rocky Sin played 8 snaps. Cole. He played, I mean, what? And Jimmy's guy, Brandon Stevens, who was laying the wood out there, played 100% of the snaps. So what does this tell you about Rocky Sin, that even despite the fact that Darby just got here, he's kind of pretty fresh off the ACL, and there's no Marlon Humphrey, and yet Rocky Sin plays 10% of the defensive snaps?
He missed quite a bit of time in training camp. I'm wondering if that had a big impact. You know, I don't know if he's fully recovered. I don't know, you know, if they felt he missed too much time learning the system. Whereas you did have Stevens, and then again, Darby kind of came in kind of late. And so it was very surprising. That's for sure. I expected Yasin to 100% be a starter. And I think he fits Mike McDonald's defense really well. Whereas, you know, I'd have to check on the injury, cause that must've played a factor. But at the same time, I'm pretty sure he practiced in full all last week. It was just Andrews and Marlon. So it is very weird, but I know that sometimes when guys miss training camp, it can be really tough for them to kind of integrate back into the system. Stevens is just that guy that he's like the teacher's pet. Like, and I don't mean that necessarily negative. Coaches love this guy. And, you know, he does go out there and he's, like I said, he's the closest to making a play I've ever seen without making the actual play.
He'll make it one day. Murphy's Law.
It's that one play where he came in for the swap sideline, and I'm like,
I mean,
of course it's 21. Like, what? Like, it's every single time.
I know.
It's tough to watch, and that's coming from someone who has coached. And when you have a kid that's out there playing as hard as he does, and like you said, like, he lays the wood, and he ran up in the alley a few times and really laid it. And so, you know, that's one thing that I think frustrates coaches, because, you know, if you're dealing with a guy that, you know, just can't cover someone, and they're, you know, the ball is being caught and they're 5 yards away, it's kind of like, all right, well, you know, there's not a whole lot we can do there.
Right.
Stevens is frustrating because he is there. He's sticky in coverage. He just doesn't have his head around to the ball, or his swap misses the ball. There was that he gave up a touchdown early last year, and he came across the receiver like that, and like his hand just missed the ball, and he caught it for a touchdown. I'm like, in the perfect position, couldn't have better coverage, you know, good aggressive physical move, but doesn't hit the ball. So it's tough. It is very, very tough.
Yeah, well, he'll. I think he'll keep improving. I'm excited to watch.
DK's
gonna have to start rolling the tape. I tell you what, DK's gonna have to start. DK, you're gonna have to start pulling up some tape, dude. Because when I get these takes right, you gotta roll them, man. You gotta roll these suckers. Because I said it, Glenn. I said
clip it.
Third most.
Yeah, yeah, he did. And like Cole said, I think a lot of people are expecting him now to do a little more at safety, not just at corner, especially when Marlon's back.
Helps.
I mean, and the tackling. I mean, my goodness, this guy can certainly come up and help around the line of scrimmage. Now, we also learned a little bit about the pass rush. That's another group where we really wanted to learn a lot about. I think it looks like those guys might have gotten some confidence out of this one, Cole. And that might be the biggest part of coming out of this game is Ojabo looked confident. Owe looked confident. And you know, sometimes that's all it takes.
Oh, 100%. So I had a Clowney video that just came out tonight. I got an Owe video coming out tomorrow. I did some Ojabo clips this morning on my Twitter. So I kind of dove into them this morning, so it's fresh in my mind. This is a group where they had zero sacks. Well, Ojabo had the strip sack, but Clowney and Owe had zero sacks, but they combined for 12 pressures. Yeah. They combined for 12 pressures between the two of them. And so, you know, I know that people feel pressure's great and all that, but we need to convert sacks. And I agree with you, but there's a ton of value in bringing consistent pressure. And I think what I want people to think of and put it in the context of is how Mike McDonald runs his defense. And I say that because you will see a ton of Patrick Queen, Roquan Smith, Kyle Hamilton sniffing around the line of scrimmage. And what they're doing is they're creating 6-7 man simulated pressures, and then they're dropping two of them into coverage. There was a play where Clowney had a quarterback hit, and they had, it was Patrick Queen and Owe on the right side of the O-line, and then they had four guys on the left, Clowney being the most outside. They dropped the both guys on the right side, so the left guard and left tackle had nobody to block, and then they had the four guys attack the other three men of the offensive line. Clowney runs free, and that's the beauty of Mike McDonald's system. And so guys like Clowney and Owe and even Ojabo, who can get up the field quick and, you know, close on a guy. And we saw it twice. Clowney missed tackles on should-be sacks. And so, sure, he missed the tackle, not saying that's not okay. Like, that's not good. We want to see him make those. But the fact that he was getting to the quarterback and putting himself in a position to make those plays, I feel pretty confident that Jadeveon Clowney is not going to keep missing tackles. So that's something that I think is going to come. And I think Clowney's going to start to be able to get some sacks. I think Owe's going to be able to get some sacks. Owe's using his hands way better than he has. And I think it's shown the impact of Chuck Smith, Dr. Rush, the new outside linebacker coach. He has a pass rush plan. He was, you know, hitting Laramie Tunsil, a top five left tackle, with under rips and dip rips and, you know, all sorts of pass rush moves. So, you know, once he's going against Orlando Brown Jr., who should be a right tackle, folks, you know, it's going to be a lot tougher for him than, like, Tunsil was able to recover well. I don't know if Orlando Brown Jr. is going to be able to do that.
He's certainly not as fast as
a man. BK looked good too, didn't he? I mean, how fast did he look tracking him down? Holy smoke.
That man's in a contract year. You know how that goes in Baltimore. He's probably going to finish with 13 sacks.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, but so I'm glad you brought that up because we talked about this in the post game, right, Glenn? Like, Adafe didn't register a sack, but he was so active in this game. So active and so disruptive. I think it's fair to say that even though Ojabo had the highlight, I think Adafe was probably more disruptive throughout the entirety of the game. While Ojabo, of course, had the strip sack, and that was a play we needed, and that counts as well. That's not to be dismissed. But, man, who thought Clowney was going to get off? I mean, look, he is Jadeveon Clowney. But honestly, who thought he was going to get up off the couch, put the Pringles down, and be like, all right, coach, let's do this, right? Because, like, that's basically what he did.
I mean, it's got to be all the other stuff.
Number 24.
Oh, I know. The number is garbage. But I mean, seriously, it has to be reputation. And the fact that let's be honest, he basically quit on the Browns last year. But it's just amazing to me that this guy was just sitting out there for the value that they got him with and how much he brought week one. I mean, it's just incredible that signing. As long as they can keep him motivated and, you know, keep him happy, it seems like this is going to be an absolute steal.
You can tell why he was the number one overall pick if you didn't remember, because no training camp, no nothing. The dude just wakes up like this.
I woke up like – he's like Beyonce. I woke up like this.
Right. Literally,
that's just what
right?
he does.
He flips the locks back, puts him in the rubber band on the helmet, and he's like, dude, let's roll.
He's mashing gonna be
doing the same thing when he's 40. Like, he's that guy. You know what I mean?
Well, he's certainly a freak. But, hey, last question from me, Cole. How good is Roquan Smith and Patrick Queen as a tandem? I mean, holy smokes.
They're fun, man. They're just flying all over the field. It was that was special to see them kind of come out in week one and be able to do that. Seeing them both. And like I said, it's the way that they fit and what Mike McDonald wants to do, which I think elevates them. And, you know, there's still some lapses in coverage. And I think you just got to remember when they're playing zone coverage, receivers always attack middle linebackers in the middle of the field. That's just how it goes. But overall, super impressed. The speed, the tenacity, seeing them both make plays on fourth down, I thought that was pretty cool. Roquan getting a sack and then, you know, getting that fourth down stuff. Patrick Queen with the sack. Just, again, guys that fit what he wants to do, and they're just going to continue to get better.
Yeah, man, I'm super excited to see what my follow-up question, and this last one as well for me, Cole. I was going to ask you a follow-up to that, actually. Defensively, what is, when you have those, because I feel like that position, people will call it like the running back of the defense, in that like they're relatively undervalued. Now, the Ravens, I don't see them undervaluing that position. Obviously, we have the highest paid guy in the league at that position. But my question is, when you have guys that are that good playing in tandem together, how much does that facilitate the rest of that defense? Like, what does that allow them to do? You know, because I see it as a way to cover up some gaps.
Yeah, I think the big thing is they could be a little bit more versatile with how they use their safeties, for example. So you saw Kyle Hamilton stepping up to the line of scrimmage and blitzing more than you'd expect. And I think that's because they trust their speed to whether that's running and chasing and flat coverage against running backs out in the open field. You're going to trust a guy like Roquan or a guy like Patrick Queen more than some of the more, I don't want to say old school, but I'll call them old school linebackers, like CJ Mosley type middle linebacker, guys that just are more thumpers in the middle of the field, guys that will fullback up in the line of scrimmage, but not necessarily the guys you want space. I think that's the biggest difference. But for me, it's always really about how the D-line plays off the linebackers. And I think the way the Ravens have built this defensive line with, you know, big noses and Travis Jones and Michael Pierce. Michael Pierce had the most underrated, no one's talking about it. And I think it needs to be highlighted. He had one hell of a game. He's out there 6 foot, 355 pounds swimming dudes. It was a thing of beauty.
Let me tell you what, he ain't 6 foot. I saw him at Cheesecake Factory. Nope, not a chance.
5'10"? Was he 5'10"?
Maybe. With the shoes on? Yeah. Boy's a flare hydrant. It's great.
And he's out there just making finesse pass rush moves.
Yeah.
It was a thing of beauty. But I think
that Travis
see
him
is...
in white pants, dude. All that jiggle, dude. My gosh, Mike. Come on, bro. Sorry to cut you off, Cole.
No, it's all good. The way they've kind of built a bigger physical defensive line, Matabike is kind of the exception. I'd say Brody is a lot more like Pierce and Jones, you know, big physical guys. And just the way they can create. If you guys remember when the Ravens signed Helode Nata, it was because Ray Lewis said, go get me a defensive tackle to take some pressure off me. And I think that's really what those big guys up front are able to do. The way Travis Jones, the way Michael Pierce, Broderick Washington eat double teams, it creates lanes for Patrick Queen and Roquan Smith to use their speed. And it's really the way that front seven meshes together that I think is going to be a really good thing to come for this run defense, especially, you know, we got the Browns in a couple weeks. Nick Chubb looked great the other day. I think that's going to be a huge matchup, and just the way they match up a good offensive line and are able to eat some of those guys to create space for Roquan and Queen to step up and make tackles.
Love it.
Yeah, certainly a lot to be excited about here in Baltimore, even with the disappointing injuries that came in week one. Cole, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Why don't you let everybody know where they can find all that you're working on?
Absolutely, and thanks again for having me, guys. I love doing this. So at Cole Jackson FB over on Twitter, you guys can find all sorts of film clips, and then the Road Graders YouTube channel. I'm just trying to put out as much content as possible, focusing on playing the trenches because I think it's an underserved market. So getting the big sloppies their spotlight.
Nice. Yeah, we appreciate it. Absolutely. You guys go check out all his stuff. Yes. And
open
Cole,
invitation, Cole, anytime.
Absolutely. Look forward to having you on shortly.
Have a good one, man.
Awesome. Thanks, fellas.
Yep. All right. Thanks. Cool. So, I mean, look, there's a lot of good. I mean, that's what I think people around Baltimore weren't saying enough is all the good that came out of this game. Yeah, it's disappointing when you see guys go down, but you know, let's look around just look around our division. I mean, everyone had injuries that were big time names. I mean, just look at the Steelers got their doors blown off, and then lost Deontay Johnson and Cam Hayward. I mean that. Yeah. And they got their doors. So at least the Ravens dominant win.
All right.
And look, the injuries aren't great, but the good news is Stanley and Linderbaum aren't season enders. And I think they can absorb the other two.
Yeah. And let me also put this in perspective. I think I mentioned this earlier today. I think the reason Baltimore Ravens fans are a bit bummed is because the anticipation about how we would win football games. Right, yeah. About how we would spread it out and chuck the football around. Lamar would throw for 6,000 yards, all these things, right? We won much differently, but let's remember that last year we struggled in the red zone, and what was everyone beating their heads about, Glenn? Why aren't we running the football in the red zone, right? Mm-hmm. We had the best rushing attack in NFL, in NFL history, the best rushing quarterback in NFL history. Why aren't we running the ball? And guess what we did? We scored 3 tutties by rushing the football in the red zone. So ultimately, like, number one, we scored in the red zone. Number two, the fact that we rushed it, knowing that Monken is going to continue to ramp up this passing game, is crucial, because what it leads to is us being a more versatile football team, offensively speaking, right? So I think that's important to remember, that just because it didn't manifest itself in the way that we were all excited about, trust me, Glenn, I know you and I were just as excited as everyone else to see Lamar throw that thing out there and, like, you know, see OBJ and Zay obviously did his thing, but just to see, you know, but I don't think Lamar's ever going to be a 50 throws, 45 throws. I don't know if that's what we want. And I don't know if that's getting the most out of Lamar. Now, one thing I will say, Glenn, that I hope they do is I hope we get more opportunities to push it down the field. Like that ball to OBJ was fun. Dude. I hope we get more of those. You know, what I mean? Because even, you know, Lamar in spurts under Greg Roman's offense, dude, when you push the ball in the field, it looked nice. Mm-hmm. And I hope we see a little bit more of that. But ultimately, like, the scoreboard is the scoreboard. Like, who cares how we get in the red zone? Let's just get in the red zone. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And to your point, the big play, I want to see more attempts. I mean, if you see single coverage with a guy like OBJ on the outside or Bateman on the outside, throw it up, give him a chance, because I got to imagine that they're going to do everything they can to at least make sure it's not an interception. And even an incomplete deep ball lets the defensive coordinator know that we're willing to do that. So you better cover that. And if you never show them that, then a DC's never going to be nervous that you're going to do it. So I think, I'd love to see completions, but I want to see more attempts, period, whether they're complete or incomplete, especially if you get singled up on the outside with really any of our guys. I'll put Zay in that category, even though, you know, he's on the smaller side. But I don't know. I wish we would have had time to ask Cole. I didn't want to keep him too much longer. But we didn't even touch on Zay Flowers. Pause. We didn't even touch on the game that Zay Flowers had. James Lee Wiley says, the injuries didn't bother me as much as the Lamar turnovers when he was pressured. But to James's point, it's so hard to even know, because I think when they went into this game, Jimbo, they went in with the game plan of, we got a pretty damn good offensive line, and I think we can scheme some plays that maybe take a little longer, maybe our 5-step drop, and ask Lamar to hold the ball a little more and ask for it to develop. And I think what they found out was this offensive line was not ready to give him that kind of time. And so I'm hopeful with a week that they'll have a game plan that's more suited to get the ball out of his hands quicker. And I think that would help James, to James Lee Wiley's point, it'll help when Lamar just be pressured less often, you know?
Yeah. I have to agree with you there. I think that just getting the ball, and Lamar's talked about this. That's the thing, is that Monken needs to find a way to get with Lamar, to get on the same wavelength, to say, recognize the pressure. Where's the easy out? Where's the easy pass? What can we do with the football just to improve this? There's no way it continues to be this way. Cause I think that when John talked to Monken, he said, we need two things. We need to improve under pressure, because there was multiple times that, I mean, the Miami game comes to mind, but there's other teams that are doing the same thing, and we need to improve in the red zone. Like, forget all the schemes and all the change and all this. Those are the two areas we really need to improve upon. And so if we can do that, I think we'll be a much improved offense. So yeah, we need to figure that out for sure. I mean, the statistics were pretty ugly with Lamar under pressure, but let's get just like you said, Glenn, let's get the ball out early. Now, this is my only question. How much of that is Monken drawing it up? And how much of that is, like we've talked about, Lamar's want to always make the home run? You know what I mean? Because some of that burden falls on Monken. Some of that falls on Lamar. And obviously, even some of it falls on the guy's ability to get open quickly. But I think we have guys that can do that at this point. But I wonder how much of that is scheme. How much of that is Lamar being like, all right, if I can get a nanosecond more of this thing, or if I can, you know, juke one guy and get this sucker downfield, I know it's a home run. That's my only concern, is that we continue to see that.
Yeah. Well, I think if he gets the time, I'm confident Lamar knows what to do with it. But if you can't give him the time, because to Cole's point, it's a tough matchup for our offensive line going up against these Bengals. If you can't give him that time, then you got to find a way to get the ball out of his hands quicker. And I know Pat Ricard, like you said, is going to be a big, big part of this this upcoming week, helping out those guys, especially at left tackle and at center. Yeah. But what other thing they got to do to help these guys out, Jimbo? 13 penalties, over 100 lost yards due to penalty. I believe I heard the stat. This is like our fourth most penalties in the history of the franchise. I mean, is it something like you think some of this was just, you know, the refs were kind of flag happy? Do you think it was some first game, you know, rust or like, what can they do? Because it's like, yeah, it's at the feet of the coaches, but the coaches weren't out there holding guys. The coaches weren't out there having procedural issues. Yeah. Like, how do they fix that?
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to, and the injuries and this I'll pair together. Like, this is the manifestation of no preseason football for the starters, because every team has gone all the way that way, right? Not every, 90% teams have gone all the way that way. And what does that show up as? Injuries? And this is just me talking, right? Like, I'm not a doctor, right? You know what I mean? Obviously, there's some statistics behind this. But, you know, there's also, anyway, there's statistics to favor anything, right? Like, that's just the way that goes. My point is that what I'm noticing, just me talking here, right? Consider it, take it for what you want, is injuries. And then the penalties is certainly, I think, a solid correlation between lack of time and then, you know, your first game is really a preseason game, man. So I think I'm not crazy concerned about it now. I think they just need to, all right, we got the first game under our belts. Let's move forward. And so I think it's just about getting the jitters out, getting it in. And because we got vets up there, right? Zeitler's a vet, Moses is a vet, even McCary's a vet, right? Like, and Simpson's a vet. We've got guys. It's not like we got all young guys. Linderbaum's the youngest guy, but I think that I expect that number to go down without changing anything except the fact it's game two.
Yeah, and hopefully you're right, because they have a huge, huge opportunity here, Jimbo. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they can go on the road, not only win a division game, but win a game against a team that most are picking to at least win the division, but some are picking them to challenge the Chiefs and others for coming out of the whole AFC. I mean, if they can put these guys down in an 0-2 hole, including losing their home opener, man, that would be big, big time. And that offensive line over in Cincinnati certainly struggled to keep Burrow afloat. They couldn't open up any holes in the run game. So, This is certainly a big opportunity, but one that I think the Ravens,
I cannot wait.
Yeah, I think they're ready for it, man. I honestly know that everybody's saying, well, the Bengals, man, they're gonna be stirred up, ready to play. They can't go 0-2. They came off an embarrassing. Okay, sometimes it just is what it is, and you are who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the two games last year, the Ravens did a real, real nice job of figuring out that offensive scheme and said, you know what, we're gonna take away the big play and we're gonna make you beat us with nickel and dime. And Burrow just doesn't feel comfortable operating like that. So I'm going to come into this game very confident, even if Marlon Humphrey's not in the back end to help cover these talented wideouts. I think we're going to have something for him this weekend, Jimbo.
Yes, sir. Cannot wait to see how it goes down. I think that's it for us tonight.
Yeah, I think so. But look,
DK's reminding me. Yes, yeah. We got to keep the lights on. Got to talk about BetUS. Only the best sponsor and partner we've had in a long time.
That's right.
Yeah, let's talk about BetUS. Ladies and gentlemen, first of all, I will challenge you to find a better deal as far as getting 125% match on your initial deposit up to $2,500. BetUS puts their money where their mouth is. They're the OGs in the game. They have the most diversified portfolio of bets. Bet on prop bets, pregame bets, in-game bets, season-long bets. Make yourself some money. I mean, it's It's not rocket science. Bet responsibly. But I tell you what, go out there, have some fun, make some dollars, and use the link. It's in the description, and it's an easy way to support the show. It's the way I see it.
Yeah, I think this weekend is an opportunity because I think the line is 3.5 in is it Cincinnati's way? If I remember correctly, I think they're favored by 3.5. I'm on it. You're giving me 3.5?
Mm-hmm.
Come on, man. Come on, I'll take that half. Give me that extra half. But go with what you know. Is like I always say, don't trust the national. Nah, go with what you know. And if what you know is the Ravens, then stick to that. You got plenty of prop bets, plenty of, you know, individual player bets. You can really go wild. But yeah, absolutely check out BetUS. OGs in the business.
That's right. And I got to mention one more thing. Of course, if you guys aren't current patrons, check out our Patreon. Go ahead and check out. DK does a great job in season of writing weekly articles. So make sure to check them out.
They dropped one today, Jimbo.
That's right. And it's really great stuff. So you guys are loving the content. Check out the Patreon. It's $1 a month to get access to the articles. And then we have additional stuff. So go check it out. And give a shout out to DK. Of course, he does a great job for us. So make sure to give it a look-see.
Absolutely. That's it for us tonight, folks.
That's right.
But we'll be back on Friday. Not Thursday.
That's right.
Not
Friday.
Thursday. We don't want to interrupt and compete with the Thursday night game. So we're going to be back Friday. Likely we'll have our guys from over at Cincy Jungle joining us to kind of help set this game up. This is a big game for both sides. So, get ready. It's going to turn around quick, and we'll see you on Friday.
See you. Ah!